Cleveland. The show is back. Nick Wilson on Afternoon Drive. We got Kayla Cole, John on the board. We got MK behind the glass today. Jonathan Peterlin on the 20s. He'll be joining us as co-host in the 4 o'clock hour. But how are you doing that illustrious open courtesy of Meredith Kane? Great stuff on that. You're going to hear that throughout today's show. We've got a lot of Guardians talk on the way. And I don't know if you can feel it. I don't know if you can feel the excitement, because I don't know if my voice is going to hold up for 5 hours today. Some of that is I was screaming at the TV yesterday. Some of that is I was screaming out of celebration on Saturday in what was an electric game at home. The ridiculous crowd at Progressive Field. Guys, your Cleveland Guardians are in the ALCS. And quite frankly, guys, as we get started here, today, usually, it's a Browns Monday. We usually go right into the Browns here. I'm not doing that today. Because quite frankly, today, they're not the biggest story in Cleveland. Because yet again, the Browns have chosen to focus on other things other than winning. And yesterday's game was not in any way as disastrous as the two games before it. And certainly not as bad of a booty kicking as Washington. But it was just as predictable as everything else we've seen this season. Now, that said, my one thing that we'll get to on the Browns before we get back to the Guardians in like literally 3 seconds is the funniest thing to ever happen is to watch everyone on Cleveland Twitter, on Browns Twitter. Kevin Stefanski's press conference has been delayed. Surely this is the sweet relief we've been waiting for. Maybe it's Deshaun's job. Maybe Ken Dorsey's going to have the play call, right? Maybe, I don't know, they're benching Jed Wills. He wasn't that awful yesterday, but my point is, when you can take a shot at Jed Wills, you should take a shot at Jed Wills. Nope. They open the press conference. Sticking with Deshaun, he gives us the best chance to win. We got to coach better. We got to play better. We got to coach better. We got to execute better. Have I mentioned we got to coach better? Nothing funnier than everyone, because here's the thing. We know what Kevin Stefanski's press conferences are at this point. They're nothing. He says nothing. He stands for nothing. He's got a 1-5 record, and that is what Kevin Stefanski and the Browns are right now. But to see everybody have a glimmer of hope, and then to see the Browns do what the Browns have consistently done, which is take that glimmer of hope and batter it like a baby seal, was pretty funny. Not funny in the way that I want it to be, not funny in like a ha-ha way, but in like a really dark humor, I can't believe you're doing this to us, why are you hurting us kind of way. Now, enough about those ass clowns, almost went somewhere different. Did not intentionally almost do that. Enough about those ass clowns for right now, because we're going to the Cleveland Guardians. And I'll be honest with you guys, the entirety of the series was so much fun. And I'll be honest with you guys, I don't really have anything against the citizens of Detroit. I don't really have anything against my boy Jim Costa, who came on here 2 weeks ago, roughly a week and a half ago, and made it seem like fait accompli. I believe he said Tigers in 4. I'm not here to rub the Tigers' nose in it, because quite frankly, I don't need to. Because my team's going to the ALCS, and your team is going to Bali, or Jamaica, or Cancun, or whatever basic ass vacation that you guys are going to take because you're not in the playoffs anymore. But it was interesting. Going into game 5, I thought to myself, we're going to see what that game 2 start by Skubal, where he had you on the ropes for 7-plus innings. We're going to see how this team treats the follow-up. Do they turtle? All right, because Skubal, if Skubal has a mental advantage over you, there's no way in hell you're going to get through that. And or do you do the opposite, where you now will have seen him at by the time that Lane Thomas hit his mammoth grand slam, what, 12, 13 innings you had seen of Tarik Skubal? At which way was it going to go? And then Lane Thomas hit a massive home run, and his two home runs in that series have already paid the due of what it cost to trade for Lane Thomas. Like, I was so happy for him. I know I did the Lemon Long Lane thing all August long, even a little bit of September, but that dude has been lights out since the first week of September. And to see him come through in that moment, one, did what I think we needed to do, which is between Lane Thomas, Matthew Boyd, and Alex Cobb, guys, Those three guys have validated the Guardians' deadline approach. I'm not trying to take a win here or a victory lap because you still got eight more wins to get before I can really take this victory lap. But there were so many people who, even when those guys succeeded, would say, well, see, this proves they could have done even more. Lane Thomas, Matthew Boyd, and Alex Cobb each contributed in the regular season and in the postseason to where you're going. And this whole series, the ALDS in general, proved a lot to me. And I do want to hear from you guys today, because I know we got to talk about the abomination that is the Cleveland Browns, and I know it's deja vu, apathy, all these words you're going to hear all day long. And Kevin Stefanski's press conference today did nothing but drive that point home even more. But reality today, I'm here to celebrate this Guardians team. I'm here to celebrate the ALCS. I'm here to celebrate winning in the ALDS. And I'll be honest with you, I don't give a good damn if anybody in baseball gives this team a chance, because they're not the ones that matter. So today, I'm celebrating this team. I'm going to try and stay as positive as I can, because every single playoff series is going to bring out every single emotion we have. But the ALDS did prove a lot. Guys, if you can do what Tarik Skubal did, or what the Guardians did to Tarik Skubal in this series, which is across two starts, you got to him and you drove him out of the game. If you can do that to the best pitcher in baseball, you can do it to anyone. Gerrit Cole is a great pitcher. He's not right now on the level of Skubal. There's nobody left in the playoffs that is to the level of Skubal. So that is the number one thing that this proved, is that this team can find it. It might take him a start, might take him two starts. But like, you got Carlos Rodon on the bump today, get to his ass early, because he hasn't been any good this season. That's a slight oversimplification. But again, get to him today. And as good as Gerrit Cole is, he can be got. How? Well, because I just saw you do it to the best left-handed starter in the game. But it didn't just prove that. Honestly, I think it proved the Guardians can win a series without playing their best ball. I think there were a couple games in that where the Guardians were still playing against themselves as much as they were playing against the Tigers. And I think you proved that you can kind of find yourself the way you need to throughout this five-game series. And I think the Guardians found their offense. And I'm going to get into a couple of the rules that I have about the ALCS here, but you don't just win just by Jose Ramirez hitting three home runs a series. You don't just win by Stephen Kwan going, seemingly 3-for-4 every single damn day and being the hottest player. Hey, and Otani's doing great things. If you haven't seen the Dodgers footage, Otani single-handedly beat the Mets in game one. He's phenomenal. Kwan is, not from a power perspective, but Kwan is right up there in terms of the hottest players in baseball and left in the playoffs. But that only gets you so far. You need Lane Thomas. You need Brian Rocchio, a.k.a. playoff Brian Rocchio. You need David Fry. And as you continue to get in here, I do think you started to see a Guardians offense that was relaxing a little bit. And I think playing against the hottest team in baseball in the Tigers was the best thing to happen to you, because, one, they won just like you did. So you had to outstyle your own style to be able to get through this five-game series. That's the one way in which I think the Yankees series is easy, because their manager manages just like your manager. Their lineup is just like your lineup, right? The bullpen, the way they deploy the bullpen is just the same way you deployed your bullpen. They were one starter and a bunch of chaos out of the pen. Same thing with you. So that proved that you can beat your own style. Now you go up against the Yankees, and guys, Yankees are a hell of a team. They've got, they're a $315, $320, $330 million team. But they are stylistically so different than you. If you can exploit that, you can win this series. And I think this series, I think the ALDS proved so much. It proved the Guardian season wasn't a fluke. It proved that they did win the deadline. It proved you can get to Tarik Skubal. And you can play, and there are going to be some games, guys, where like Stephen Vogt was bad in game 5 against the Tigers. He massively overmanaged his starter in Matthew Boyd and pulled him too early. And that's why you had to go with Emmanuel Clase for two innings to save this game. And yet they won. This is a team that is winning as a team, and it is making up for their shortcomings as a team. That's exactly how they were the best team in baseball through 80 games. So really what the ALDS proved to me is that that team's still in there. And I still don't think they've played to their ceiling. Look out for the Yankees, and the Yankees should watch out if the Guardians are getting closer to playing to their ceiling, because that team can beat anybody in baseball. 216-474-0092. Nathan Zagura, Browns analyst, coming up at 3. We'll talk about, yep, the Cleveland Browns. They lost again. Spoiler alert. Darrell Ryder also joins us at 3:40. We'll get to some Browns with him. Maybe a Gardo's question or two as well. We're going to have the Steven Vogt press conference before game one of the ALCS coming up later today. Probably 5:40, 6 o'clock, you're going to hear from Steven Vogt. JP joins me as co-host here, but I'm curious for you guys. What did you learn about this Guardians team in the ALDS? Because I learned that this team still has some pretty damn good baseball to play, and I think we're also learning everybody's sleeping on them. So we're going to get to that path forward for the Cleveland Guardians. Your calls here, 216-474-0092. Want to hear from you. What did you learn about this team in the ALDS? We will turn the page to the ALCS next on 92.3 The Fan. But we are talking guards here, and I just got to be honest with you guys. Like, I feel as good as I can. And listen, no one's going to give him a chance. Nobody should give him a chance. Like, baseball's rigged. Let's just be honest with you. Baseball is rigged against small market teams. And teams like the Guardians, who even amongst small market teams are kind of middle-of-the-road spenders for small market teams, not for big market teams, and who, quite frankly, this year, what is it, $20 million in dead cap between Laureano and one or two other guys? So, like, the reality is no one expects you to win because you're the plucky little upstart. I will say, I hate house money. I really do. And here's why.
Hate.
Just because there are some truities in baseball. The game is rigged for big market teams. Just because small market teams usually have some sort of limitation to them. And we see that even in the Guardians. I mean, on any given night, you can count on a good night, 6 of the 9 hitters in the lineup. On a good night, we're maybe getting 5 innings from a starter and then turning it over to the bullpen. So I haven't seen the limitations with the Guardians. What people miss, though, when they say the rotation isn't very good, what people miss, though, when they say, well, the lineup isn't very good, or you can't manage the bullpen in the same way in a 7-game series, which actually is a valid conversation we have to have after the way Game 5 was managed by Steven Vogt. The reality is, all those things are generalities. None of those things have to do, well, okay, but they've got 3 hitters to your Jose. All right, well, but they've got Gerrit Cole and you've got Tanner Bibee. Okay, you still have to play the damn series. And so I don't really care that no one's giving him a chance. It doesn't offend me because no one would give them a chance. It doesn't matter. You could have Juan Soto. If the Guardians had traded for Juan Soto 2 years ago, people would still say, well, you don't have enough starting pitching. Hell, if you had traded for Jack Flaherty, who right now is rolling for the Dodgers, they'd say, well, yeah, it's Jack Flaherty, but Bibee's not really. Like, there's no interesting thought or analysis going into this series. And I'm sure you guys heard the audio. You're going to hear it again. We're going to play A-Rod and Derek Jeter having a chuckle hut moment, talking about what an easy path it is. I don't give a damn. I don't care. Because those are generalities, right? When Scott Braun joined us 2 weeks and was like, yeah, the Guardians have no chance to win a World Series. You think they do? I don't care. Because about once every decade, a small market team does the thing that everybody said they couldn't do. A decade ago was Kansas City. You are the last of three teams, or sorry, the last of the 4 teams in baseball, and the team with the lowest payroll. I don't care. All that stuff goes out the window because the Yankees, I think they're a team that plays with a lot of talent. I also think they're a team that is consistently in the playoffs here recently, guys. They have not played up to their... The Yankees should have won a World Series. You could make a case the Yankees should have won a World Series each of the last 10 years. They haven't. Same thing with the Dodgers, by the way, who I think right now, that's the team you should be afraid of. With Ohtani playing the way Ohtani's playing, you can tell he's making up for lost time with that lackluster Angels franchise by hitting every baseball and hitting the cover off baseball. So no one's selling this as this is going to be easy. It's not. But the Guardians can absolutely win this one. I think it starts with getting tonight. Rodon is not the same level of pitcher that Gerrit Cole is. If you take game one, you're playing with house money and then some, even though we hate that phrase. Because then it puts all the pressure on Gerrit Cole. And here's the thing about this Yankees team. And this is a historical thing. This is not a this year thing because they've handled their business this year. They made quick work of the Royals. But this Yankees team has been a lot like previous iterations of the Boston Celtics until this year. Which is that when they get punched in the mouth in the postseason, they just fall apart. And again, that requires the Guardians to do the punching. But the Guardians can win the ALCS. It starts with Vogt learning his lessons from Game 5. You're going to have a longer leash with some of these starters. I really do think in 4 of the 7 games to win, you're going to need to obey the 5-inning rule. The closer you get to 5 innings from your starter, the closer you are to winning. And that's probably going to put more pressure on the offense, like even tonight. Alex Cobb did not go as far into the game in his one start as Matthew Boyd did in his first start. Gave you a good chance, but probably didn't give you enough innings. You're probably going to have to manage Alex Cobb a little differently and give him a little bit more leeway. That starts tonight. But if they're going to win this series, and maybe not in all 4 games, but certainly when you start stacking these games back-to-back, like Games 1 and Games 2 and then Games 3 and Game 4, if there's no off day in between a game, in one of those starts, you're going to need at least 5 innings from your starter. And that's 5 innings of quality baseball, so probably 3 or less earned. So that's number one. I also think the 5-hitter rule also approaches here. It doesn't matter which 5 hitters it is. Well, okay, that's not entirely true. But on any given night, they need 5 hitters to show up. And if that's Kwan, Lane Thomas, David Fry, Brian Rocchio, and Jose Ramirez, like has most often been the case, then so be it. If one night it's Andrés Giménez, or one night maybe Josh Naylor wakes up from his sleeping coma, that's not fair. He's actually been okay. He just hasn't come up in the biggest moments of the game. He's made a couple plays. Probably we could use a few more from him. So in the same way that in at least 4 of these 7 games, you're going to need quality starts or something close to it from your starting pitchers, on any given night, you're going to need 5 of your hitters to show up. Because where the Yankees can go ahead and erase a 3-run deficit with one swing of the bat, it's harder for you to do that. Doesn't mean you can't do it. You have more power than you did last year. And I think people were surprised by the Guardians' power in the Detroit series. Don't care. I think if you obey the 2-5 rules there, the 5-hitter rule and the 5-inning rule, and Vogt doesn't overmanage the rotation or bullpen, I think that's how it starts. And then you add to it, take tonight. It doesn't mean, by the way, tonight we're going to do this thing. Is it a must win? Every freaking game in this series is a must win. It's the ALCS. But the earlier you get that first win, I think the better for you, because the Yankees do. Listen, house money, miss me with that crap. The Yankees do have all the pressure here. The downside of every analyst saying this is the easiest path to a World Series ring, the downside is the second that you lose a game, all hell is going to break loose. So the sooner you can put that pressure on the Yankees and continue to try putting pressure on the Yankees, the more likely it is that they're going to fold. 216-474-0092. What do you guys think is the key to winning the ALCS? We got more on this, but Zach has given us a call here. What's up, buddy? Happy game 1 of the ALCS day. That's terrible branding. Just go with it.
Hey, what's up? So I think the Guardians could beat anyone. They just beat Scooble. They could beat Cole. They could beat Aaron. No Browns talk today. Only Guardians. Let's go. Lane Thomas is going to blast that ball to the moon. Let's go.
Look at that.
Go Guardians.
Give me one more let's go.
Let's go.
There we go. All right. We got a youngster pitching in there. He was very excited. And I'll be honest with you. He could have been a little bit more concise with his takes. I don't care because that's the energy I want today. Let's go with Anthony in Cleveland Heights. What is your key to the Guardians winning the ALCS?
What is my key? Well, you know what? I'll say what you're saying. We're going to have to go get more length out of the starters than we did in the series versus Detroit, which is fine. I don't think, one thing I wanted to say is, I saw on the X and the other social media sites where, the guy's an aggressive manager. Okay. So, if he kept Boy, I get when Kate Smith came in, I was startled. I said, wow. We know now this guy is not going to wait to make the decision that he thinks is the right decision at any point in time. So, I think we just need to understand this is the vote philosophy going forward. And he could have kept Boyd in. They could have given out a couple runs, and people said, you got the best bullpen in the league, and you didn't get to it in a deciding game five. So the guy is not going to wait. He's just not. You know, so that's my opinion on Boyd coming out that early on Saturday. So the other thing I'll throw out there, Cobb has a high ground ball ratio, so maybe that plays into a good outing today. Judge and Soto don't get any decent wood on the ball, and so maybe that's something to look out for. Andrew Walters, he had a great pitch against Verling in the fifth inning Saturday. It was only 1-0. The count was 3-2, and he got him to swing at a high strike. It was out of the zone. And I think that was good to see in such a high leverage, the highest of leverage situations. So I wouldn't, even though he struggled Saturday, I don't think he's in Boat's doghouse or anything like that.
Anthony, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much there. Here's the thing. It didn't hit you in that game because it was the deciding game in terms of hooking Matthew Boyd early. It didn't end up killing you. It really could have. And so I'm all here for the aggressiveness of Stephen Vogt. And I actually think, when you have two aggressive managers, and you saw that. You saw how A.J. Hinch, what was that, game two, we're going to throw a lefty to make you put a lefty lineup out there. Sorry, we're going to pull a righty to get your lefty lineup out there, and we're going to pull him quick and put a lefty in there. All right? I don't think Aaron Boone's going to do that. I think Aaron Boone is very much back into I'm going to sit back and let the game happen. I think that's an advantage for the Guardians. But that doesn't mean that just all gas, no brakes is going to work simply because you have back-to-back games a lot in this series. That's where there's going to be moments where you can't pull Matthew Boyd after two innings. You just can't. And I think it was equal parts. There is pulling Matthew Boyd in game five after two innings. Then there is Sobrowski, third of an inning. Walters, third of an inning. Even Gattis and Morgan having to go two-thirds of an inning. If you're going to pull your starter early, and again, he was managing to win the game. So this is where it becomes, you're probably not going to handle this the same way at the start of a series as you will the end of the series. It was a real risk. And going to Class A for that many times, multiple innings or more than an inning, is a real risk. I'm okay with you being aggressive. I'm okay with you taking risks. But in a seven-game series, you're going to have to be a little bit more patient with your starters, even if you like to be aggressive and you like to have that feel. It is going to be more of a balance in the series because the series is longer and you're stacking more games back-to-back. The Guardians win the ALCS if, finish that sentence, 216-474-0092. When we come back, yeah, we're going to talk about exactly what happened this weekend. Can't completely ignore it. Browns talk. Yay. On the way on 92.3 The Fan. I'll be honest with you. It wasn't that bad of a game. Like, in the pantheon of disasters that we've seen this year, was it as bad as blatantly letting Malik Nabers run all over your ass for a half before putting Denzel Ward on him? No. Was it as bad as Amari Cooper's majestic, at this point it's turning into the greatest play ever in NFL history, right? It was a majestic moment where Deshaun uncorked a beautiful pass into the loving hands of Amari Cooper, and he gallivanted all the way to a touchdown. Not so fast, because Nick Harris was holding, allegedly. Nope, wasn't that bad. Wasn't as bad as getting dusted by a rookie quarterback, no matter who that rookie quarterback is. Nope, wasn't really that bad. And there were a couple really cool moments. I thought Myles Garrett's block of the field goal attempt was awesome. Just a word to the Eagles there. Number 95, you probably shouldn't let him just go through the middle of your line like that. Again, that's maybe for next time. Just keep that. But to see Rodney McLeod, who, listen, guys, I know Rodney isn't like one of our favorites because he's only been here for so long. He's more of an Eagle than he is a Brown. To see that guy score two touchdowns this season, that's a pretty cool way to cap off a career in what overall is a pretty craptastic season. So there were some good things. I've heard people want to try and spin, 10 for 10 towards the end of the game there from Deshaun. I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing any of this. I'm not polishing anything anymore because we're no longer in the time of the season where it's okay to be 1-3 or it's okay to be 1-4 if you're figuring yourself out. Because I was watching yesterday a little different. I was watching yesterday, and at no point, no matter what happened, did I think the Browns were going to win. And you understand, I'm a pretty optimistic person when it comes to football because football, even bad teams, awful teams, historically awful teams, luck or educated wish their way into a win. But there is something about this team, and anybody watching it can see it plain as day. Your interpretation of what it might be might be different than mine. Mine from JP, who's going to join me as co-host at 4. JP's from Kenny and Anthony in the morning to Jeff and Dan and Andy and Spencer and literally everybody we have with G. Bush, everybody that works here. We might all have a little different view of what it is. But winning is not the thing that matters right now. Whether that is an ownership decision, whether that's a Kevin decision, whether that's an ego decision or a hubris decision, the Browns played well enough to win yesterday. They had a chance. I mean, guys, it was 20-13 and you had the ball. You had points right there before you got pretty much kicked out of the red zone because of stupid penalties. Where have I heard that before? Or bad play calling? Where have I heard that before? Or bad plays by Deshaun, or drops. Oh, we're just playing the hits at this point. So it's funny, like, I didn't watch yesterday mad. I watched it because that's what we do in Cleveland. I watched it because, I don't know, I like this team, but I do love several members of this team. I got a lot of good feelings about Joel Bitonio. I got a lot of good feelings about Miles. You guys know when Nick Chubb comes back, that's going to make me smile whether they win 49-0 or lose 49-0. But I think I've reached this point where I simply have to do with whatever this sickness is with this Browns team. I simply have to do with it what you and I did for about 5 or 6 years there when Jimmy Haslam first took over the team. I just have to wait it out. If that's Kevin Stefanski, I got to wait you out, bud. Sorry. You can tell me it's your decision to play Deshaun and only your decision. I don't know anybody believes you, but yeah, keep doing that. They can keep saying, hey, I just got to coach better. Just got to play better. Just got to execute better. Sure. But we're at a point where whether it's Deshaun, whether he's the number one problem, whether it's Kevin, right, whether it's a senior leadership that, quite frankly, is underwhelming. Like today, Kevin Stefanski, the hardest I laughed at that press conference today was when Kevin Stefanski said, we got a good leadership group here. And I said, I'm sorry, good leadership groups don't go to 1-5. Good leadership groups don't do the finger pointing that I saw all yesterday. It was right as day, right? Amari drops, and I know the throw wasn't great, but Amari drops a ball that hit him right in the hands. And Amari's getting up, shaking his head. Okay, that's not worth $25 million to me. Hopefully it is to Jimmy Haslam. My hope is I don't have to outweigh Jimmy Haslam. My hope is I don't have to outweigh the Haslam family. I don't know I have those kind of years left in me, guys. Kind of treated my body a bit more like a toga party than a temple, okay? But the reality is, whatever this current thing is, it's not working. You can see it, I can see it, anybody watching, and it can, listen, we throw out every Deshaun, this is the worst, this, that, and the other, and you wouldn't be wrong. But I'm not watching these games expecting to win. And that, the people taking victory laps on this are full of it. No one saw this team starting 1-5. Yes, there were warning signs. Guys, it's the NFL. There's no team that doesn't have Pat Mahomes on it that doesn't have warning signs. That's the beauty of the NFL, is that parity is what it is. And on any given year, you can go where the Texans were, from the number two pick in the draft to being, a number four seed and hosting a playoff game and then going to the second round of the playoffs. That's the beauty of the NFL. But right now, this season, you guys want to change the window dressing on this? Let's bring Jameis in. Who cares? It's not going to matter. You know why? Because the same things that have these guys infighting now, going to be the same thing that they're infighting about. It just might look a little different how you lose. DTR is not going to save it. No. The Browns clearly decided at some point that winning, whether that's Deshaun-based, who calls the plays, little things in-game, like, I don't know, covering the other team's best player, that's where Jim Schwartz has to take a little bit of ownership here. Whatever it is, they're not on the same page. And now that they're 1-5, what's the use? I really don't know. I'm not trying to be cynical, by the way, but the Browns played well enough to win, and I knew they weren't going to win. Now, I'm not, it's not that I'm not used to that feeling, because I was about to say I'm not used to that. I'm not used to that being in week six with this regime. And so now, it's how do you save yourself? Now, it's who's going to be here next year and who's not. So now it is, do you have to outright release Deshaun Watson, or is he at least going to be playable at any point this season so you can try and get to the end of the season? Now it is, can we at least get back to the point where we look like we actually like to be in the same room with each other? Didn't think we were going to get here in week six. Thought it might happen at some point. But now everybody in that room, they only have to look at each other to see who could help bail each other out. 216-474-0092. We can admit it. That's the best total game they've played. The running game showed up. Admit it. You didn't think they had a chance to win that game last night, even when they had a chance to win that game. Nathan Segura, Browns analyst, will help make it make sense next on 92.3 The Fan.